right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Fearcast. This is the podcast dedicated to OCD and anxiety spectrum disorders, and getting your life back. I'm your host, Kevin Foss. Thank you all so much for joining me today. I'm a licensed therapist specializing in OCD and anxiety treatment, and this is typically a question and answer-based podcast. You can send me questions. I will answer them. It's the majority of the episodes for this podcast. However, today is going to be a special episode. For today's episode, this is going to be another continuation in the Faith and Doubt series, and I was lucky enough to find a time. And I got to tell you, this is not an easy thing to do with our schedules, but I was able to find time to have a chat with Mabina Mirza. She joined me today to talk about religious scrupulosity, most specifically religious scrupulosity within the Muslim community. So we've been trying to get this going for a long, long time, and I was finally able to find some time right before Ramadan. So this is coming out on the day that it begins Ramadan in 2024. So hopefully it is relevant for someone in the community who may need to hear this information. So we're not going to waste any amount of time in this. Let me just introduce Mabina, and then we'll just launch into our conversation. So Mabina Mirza is a licensed clinical social worker specializing in the treatment of OCD and anxiety disorders. She received training in the treatment of OCD at the UCLA OCD Intensive Outpatient Program. She is certified in cognitive behavioral therapy and incorporates mindfulness-based practices, including acceptance and commitment therapy, into treatment. She's involved in the IOCDF Faith and OCD Task Force and advocates for OCD awareness in the Muslim community. Mabina is based in Redondo Beach, California. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Mabina Mirza. All right, Mabina Mirza, thank you so much for joining me for today on the podcast to talk about religious scrupulosity for Muslim communities.
Thank you for having me, Kevin. I'm so happy to be here. Happy to put the word out.
Absolutely. Well, you are my first call for any question, any concern, anything having to do with Islam. So I appreciate you spending your time talking to us just about OCD, about religious group, in a very specific population that I don't think gets enough conversation or enough addressing in the world of OCD talk. So I appreciate you being the representative and the authority in all the world on this subject. So I appreciate you being on.
Thanks. I try my best, but I am very, very flawed.
Am I adding too much pressure?
A little bit, but I'll get through it.
Okay. For anybody out there who's listening, I've known Mabina for a little bit, and she's fantastic. She knows what she's doing, and I'm really glad to have her on and that she was willing to come on. So why don't we start off with just... I guess tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into the world of OCD treatment? And then specifically, how did you get into the interest of working with religious scrupulosity?
Right. So my journey was a little interesting. I started working with the people afflicted with OCD in my undergraduate years at UCLA. I was looking for volunteer opportunities, and I was scrolling through a page, and there was an opportunity to work directly with clients at the UCLA Intensive Outpatient Program for OCD. And I thought that was so cool as an undergrad, just to work directly with clients. So I started volunteering there, and I honestly, the rest is history. I fell in love with doing ERP, with working with people with this ego dystonic disorder. And I went on to do different things. I worked in community mental health for a while, and my heart was always in working with OCD. So I came back to this. And working with religious scrupulosity, that just kind of happened naturally. I'm a practicing Muslim, was born and raised in Southern California, grew up in the community. My parents were part of the generation that built the institutions here for Muslims. So I was very involved in the community. And there aren't many, or there are only a handful of us, Muslim OCD specialists. So, you know, people started coming to my door saying, I'm Muslim, I have OCD, can you help? They were looking for somebody with that cultural understanding. So it just kind of, it happened, and I love it. I love serving my community to this day.
That's fantastic. And Yeah, and hence you being my go-to person. You know about it, you care about it, you're invested in it, and you practice it. You know the ins and outs of the community, of the religion, and you kind of can help see where things are being distorted and see, right, and help catch compulsions. And that's kind of what we do. So, right. Well, so why don't you talk initially about just what is religious scrupulosity, and then specifically, how do you see religious scrupulosity kind of hijacking a Muslim practice?
Right. So religious scrupulosity is a theme of OCD. It's simply that OCD can latch onto any theme, whether it's contamination or sexual orientation or a relationship. And a religious scrupulosity is when OCD latches onto somebody's faith, beliefs, practices, or morality. And it can really kind of hijack a practicing religious person's religious beliefs and practices. It can make them doubt whether they're practicing right, whether they believe right, and really take them away from the actual faith traditions that exist. Mm-hmm. So OCD affects 2-3% of the population across the board, whether a person is Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, atheist, agnostic. So for the billions of Muslims in the world, it affects 2-3% of the population. Mm-hmm. And what that can look like is a Muslim can start to doubt whether they are committing blasphemy or not, right? Whether they accidentally said something or did something that brought in what we call kufr, or associating something else with God. Or it can latch onto somebody's belief practices. So Muslims, we have a set of practices that we do every day, and we say Islam is a way of life, right? So we pray 5 times a day, we fast in the month of Ramadan, we have certain moral standings that we follow. So OCD can latch onto those things and have somebody doubt how they're actually practicing their faith, how they're praying, how they're fasting, if they did good works, if they were good to their family, etc.
Right, right. Yeah, and it can start latching itself onto any aspect of that. And the way that it impacts just the perception of whether or not I'm good enough, whether or not I'm doing all the right things, and whether or not I'm the right person or enough of a person to be enough for God.
Right.
So how does... I'm trying to find the right question. I have 100 questions in my head, and that's the problem. So I guess tell me a little bit about what are some of the ways that, what are some of the more common obsessions that can happen within scrupulosity for this community?
Yeah. So what I see,
yes,
is a lot of obsessions around prayer, because again, we pray 5 times a day, and this is a pillar of our religion. We've got 5 pillars. This is one of them. Okay.
Yeah. And I think for someone who doesn't know, when they say they pray 5 times a day, it's not like they're mandated to pray a lot. It is 5 times per day. And that is one of the 5 pillars, one of the 5 requirements of religious life. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So I'll just describe the prayer really quick for people that don't know. So there are times throughout the day where we are required to stop and turn towards God, specifically turn towards Mecca, in the direction of Mecca, and stand in a state of cleanliness and perform the prayer, which is performing certain motions and saying certain things. So we're not just raising our hands and asking things from God. That's a separate thing, but this is a very ritualized prayer. Mm-hmm. And there's certain requirements to be in the state of cleanliness for prayer, and there's certain requirements that we're required to say during the prayer. So it is a very ritualized portion of our day. And I say that because I want you to hear how OCD can latch onto that, right?
Yes.
Right. So there are requirements, but there's also a ton of flexibility, right? So for a person with OCD, that flexibility goes out the window.
Right.
And the rigidity sets in. Yeah.
Because as you're laying it out there, you're saying, here are all the requirements, here are the pillars, here are the things, here are the five things that I have to do to be a Muslim in good standing. So I just have to do these things in this way. All right. But then while you talk about these requirements, you also talk about a sense of flexibility. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love something that Alec Pollard says, is that he says, you know, not everybody in one religion is scrupulous. There's mm-hmm. There has to be a way for people within that religious community to be able to do the, quote, requirements in a functional way. So not everybody has so in other words, there has to be a little bit of leeway, a little bit of flexibility, but you're right, with scrupulosity just goes right out the door.
So yes.
Talk about that tension between a requirement, but a flexibility.
Exactly. I'll give you an example.
Ooh, I love
okay. examples. Yeah. So again, I said to pray, we're generally required to be in the state of cleanliness. Now, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Right. It generally means don't have any urine, feces on you. Let's just put it that way. Right. So,
and I'm going to go ahead and say that's a relatively low bar.
It's a low bar, right? There's other things that, right. But generally, right. Yes. We think about going into a state of cleanliness. We don't want urine and feces all over us. We want to pray to God when we're clean. So when people use the restroom, right, that's where problems come into place, right? How mm-hmm. clean do I need to be mm-hmm. to be able to pray? Okay. Now in Islam, there's a concept of leave the doubt. Mm-hmm. If you generally think you're clean and you did enough due diligence, you're then in a state of cleanliness. Mm-hmm. This does not mean you need to wipe yourself over and over or use a ton of water or go take a shower every time you use the bathroom. You do not need a high level of certainty. In Islam, there is room for doubt. Generally, do your best and then go pray. So for a person with OCD, they need that certainty. I need to be certain that I'm clean. So I'm going to sit here on the toilet for a very, very long time, make sure all the urine left my body. I need to make sure I clean myself properly. You know, that doesn't even feel right. So I'm going to go take a shower. None of that is in the religion. The religion has built in flexibility around a state of cleanliness.
Yeah. And a common cognitive distortion or a common thing that happens within OCD is having a black and white view of the world. And if there are two options, clean or dirty, then pretty much we're going to be in the dirty category. And then compulsive efforts just to try to get perfectly clean. And man, the goalpost of that changes quite a bit.
Right. It does. And it will always change. It will never stay the same. The moment you think you've got it and you figured it out, OCD will find a way to creep in. So cleanliness is a very, very common obsession that a person will have. And trying and striving to get that certainty around cleanliness is a common compulsion that people in Islam have.
Right. So in trying to help someone to get over that hurdle, because obviously folks who are struggling with religious scrupulosity, while they may be concerned, or for some, they may be concerned that they don't have enough faith or they don't care enough, or they're trying to prove themselves. In essence, they are doing their best. They're doing beyond their best to be enough. And they kind of, it's very easy to think of the anxiety, their quote shortcomings, as a lack of faith, or as just not being good enough, and they can kind of view it as they can over spiritualize the issue rather than viewing it as a anxiety issue. How do you help someone to see? This came up in another question elsewhere. It's how do you help someone to differentiate which parts of this is a religious issue and which part of it is an anxiety disorder issue?
Yeah, I will just say with a lot of heart that OCD is not a faith issue. It is absolutely not a faith issue. It is not an issue of faith. And I think guilt and shame fuel OCD. There's a lot of guilt that people practicing religious folks feel when it comes to their religious practice. And it can become like this snowball, right? Because OCD will pull you away from your faith, and then you'll start to feel more guilt and shame, and then you'll start to feel like, I'm not religious enough, and why can't I just do this? And a person might even hear that from family, friends, and maybe even their religious community, mm-hmm. that they just need to pray more. Ooh. They just need to have stronger faith. That is absolutely not the case. OCD is a mental health affliction, and with correct treatment and medication, if needed, people can and do get better. And at that point, the hope is they can become closer to their faith practices.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about working with the religious community you're working with a client who's struggling with these obsessions, but their community is saying, you know what? You just need to pray a little bit more. You just need to, you know, read a little bit more, get into it. It needs to penetrate you a little bit more. You need to do it. You know, you're not doing it enough, right? Mm-hmm. How do you help either that individual have that leeway, right? Mm-hmm. Not perfection versus, mm-hmm. Hearing what their community is saying, which is just to do more, and that it is a spiritualized issue.
I would say that if somebody out there suspects that they have OCD, find a trusted individual, a mental health professional, or a trusted faith leader, yeah. who understands mental health afflictions, and get their opinion. If they're hearing from community that you just need to be spiritual, this needs to penetrate your heart more, right? Sit in meditation, right? We say, like, correct your intentions, right? Purify your intentions, focus better during the prayer, you know, fast, give charity, all those things. If that's not working for you, that's probably a sign that this is something else. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can still have your spiritual practices, but it is not necessarily the cure. The cure lies in correct treatment. And we believe that the cure always, always comes from God, mm-hmm. right? It will come. We have a saying, Kevin, trust in God, but tie your camel.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah, the meaning, don't let your camel wander in the desert. Trusting that God won't let it run away, get lost. You tie your camel, you keep it safe. You do your part, right? You tie a good knot, you keep that camel safe, and then you trust in God to do the rest. So in this situation, for me, tying your camel is finding trusted people, getting correct treatment, and then trust in God.
I love that saying.
You could use it, you can borrow it anytime.
I just might. And that speaks to our previous conversations about desert religions.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah. Okay. So we're recording this on the Friday before Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
So there for a lot of folks with their different religions, there are going to be these major holidays, major festivals, major events that call for different or special requirements put upon them that are going to be different or above and beyond what the average requirements are throughout the calendar year. So Ramadan is, I guess, tell us a little bit about what Ramadan is and what the requirement is, or what is this season? And then how can someone with scrupulosity, how can they effectively engage with this season how would OCD attack this? And then how can they effectively get through this time while fighting their OCD? That was almost a question.
Okay. So close. Yeah. Ramadan is upon us. It is Friday today, and Ramadan starts Sunday night. Our first fast is Monday. Ramadan is our holiest month of the year. We go by the lunar calendar, so it's 28 or 29 days of the year, and we fast for those days from sunrise to sunset, meaning we abstain from any drink or any food. We cannot ingest anything through those days. It is difficult. It is a marathon, but it is a beautiful spiritual practice that we have. In addition to that, we spend a lot of time in community generally. Mm-hmm. We go to our mosques at night. We pray all night, especially the last 10 nights are the best nights of the entire year. So we will be up a lot, just praying, meeting with people, eating. We feast every night when we break our fast. I mean, those of us who are lucky enough to have access, we break our fast in community or with family. It's a beautiful time of the year. For a person with scrupulosity, there's an added difficulty at times. For the fast can be difficult, just like any religious practice. OCD can latch onto that fast. So, I mean, I had a client just recently tell me that they were doing a fast in preparation. You know, some of us practice fasting before we have to fast the entire month. Mm-hmm. So, she kept wiping the corners of her mouth, thinking that something might have gotten into her mouth and her fast was broken.
Right.
Right. And like I said before, there's a lot of flexibility in the religion. Things can accidentally go into your mouth. You can accidentally forget and take a bite of food, and God is forgiving. You'll be forgiven for that. Right. So OCD will latch onto something, make it very rigid. Mm-hmm. And a person with OCD in Ramadan, it can be a very, very difficult time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic example of just this minute thing, just wiping the edge of your mouth. The average person might think nothing of it, mm-hmm. but what if there was this individual little microscopic speck of food that yeah. could have gotten in? And I think that certainly speaks to that all or nothing component of that,
right.
of OCD. So, For someone who, you know, they may have that, or as we previously talked about, you know, being clean enough for prayer, right? What is the right thing to do? Inspecting clothes, inspecting underwear, inspecting mm-hmm. all these different components. How can someone work through that and then try to engage in this time of Ramadan without engaging in compulsions, or while minimizing compulsions in an effective way?
Right. So engaging in Ramadan while minimizing compulsions. So there's a difference of opinion about whether to allow for allowances for somebody with OCD. In the scroop clinicians community, okay. there's a difference of opinion. So I would say talk, if somebody is thinking about whether they can even fast or not with their level of OCD, I would say talk to a clinician, talk to a trusted faith leader, and see what they think, run that by them. Because if this month is going to be a month of mental anguish, mm-hmm. it might not be worth it this year. But again, talk to faith leaders, talk to clinicians. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense, yeah. Yeah, so reducing compulsions. The very non-answer to that is always leaning into doubt. If you know or suspect you have OCD, know that you have the doubting disorder. You're going to doubt whether that food came into your mouth or not. You're going to doubt whether you intended it to come into your mouth or not, right? Mm-hmm. You can lean into that doubt and say, I know I've got OCD. I know God is forgiving. I'm going to keep going with this fast. I'm just going to keep going. I'm just going to keep doing it and trust in the process. Trust that I will break my fast and trust that God is forgiving, right? So one way to reduce compulsions is to acknowledge I've got OCD, accept it's here, and then move on, keep moving through the fast, keep going, and practice the fast as a person without OCD might.
Right. So, sorry, I get distracted sometimes.
Okay.
There's a dentist office in our building. This is a total side note. There's a dentist office in our building. And from time to time, corrections officers bring prisoners to get their dental care here. So it's okay. Not every day that you see someone in hand and feet shackles walking through your building. So, and police officers on either side of them. So,
wow,
it was atypical.
Wow, okay.
It was atypical. So,
yes.
Let your sister know.
That's funny. Yeah, she's probably upstairs.
She probably is. Fun fact, everybody. Mubina's sister has an office in the same building, so it's kind of fun. All right, so, and they look the same.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. There was a time where I was like, is that Mubina? No, it's not.
Aw.
Oh, you guys look the same. The same. All right. Okay, so I think, so, all right, back to these examples. So, in what other ways, I'm curious about what are some other ways that you commonly see Scroop impacting some of the other pillars?
Yeah. So, I'll go through our five pillars really quick.
That would
so,
be
the the first pillar is a testimony of faith, which is saying, I believe in one God and that the prophet Muhammad is the last in the line of prophets. Simple, easy. That's what you have to actually say to become Muslim. You have to have people witness it, and then you're Muslim. Okay? So testimony of faith. Easy peasy, right?
Easy.
You say that, bam, you're Muslim. The second pillar is you pray five times a day, right? So that praying. And so, you know, flexibility here. We're supposed to pray five times a day. We should pray five times a day. Mm-hmm. A lot of us miss some of the prayers, right? And you make it up. So we do our best. We do our best with the prayer. Kevin, you look shocked. We're not all perfect.
What? Some people miss?
Right. Some people miss prayers. We do our best. We should try. So the third is charity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a required amount of charity that we have to give every year. And then anything extra is extra. The fourth is fasting. So fasting in the month of Ramadan. Mm-hmm. And the last is we do our best to perform the pilgrimage to Mecca or Hajj once in our lifetime. So if you have the means and ability to do that, you do that. Those are the five pillars. Where I see people, the scrupulosity creeping in is mainly around the fast, the prayer, and definitely the shahada or testimony of faith. Yeah. So people will oftentimes feel like they had a blasphemous thought. You know what intrusive thoughts are? They're automatic, they're intrusive and unwanted. So people will get an automatic intrusive thought. You know, I think this tree is God. Weird thought, and a person without OCD would dismiss that thought. That's weird. I know that tree's not God,
yeah.
Right? So for a person with OCD, there's a moment of interpretation. Uh-oh, what does that thought mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I broke my testimony of faith. Maybe I'm no longer a witness that there's one God, and so I'm going to retake the shahada.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to retake this testimony of faith. They might go to a faith leader. Or as Kevin, you've probably seen, people will be mumbling under their breath
mm-hmm.
the testimony of faith over and over and over again. So they get an intrusive thought, they interpret it as real, and then they start that compulsive cycle, making sure that they did not commit blasphemy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I bet there's a bunch of, as you were talking about that one,
mm-hmm.
in the back of my head, I was hearing the concern about intention, since you also talked about the mm-hmm. concern about intention. Did I really mean it, or did I just say some things?
Right. And people want that certainty. A person with OCD has an urge mm-hmm. to find certainty when there's a doubt. I need to be certain that I'm in a state of faith, so they'll repeat it. The problem that we all know is that if they start that compulsive cycle, they cannot get out of it unless they cut out the compulsive behaviors.
Right.
Yeah.
That back to that goalpost moving. It seems as if it would just be so easy. If it was so easy, you know, just say that prayer again and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Great. We'd probably say, great, go do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say it, that little voice might say, and it, to be fair, sometimes, and especially the front end of the experience of OCD, it works. You get that certainty, you go, okay, good, I cleared that up. But then the blasphemous thought comes in again, or the, are you sure you said it right? What if you didn't say it? What if you did have a thought? What if you wanted to have a thought? And right. All these what ifs, and it says, maybe just do a little bit more, a little bit harder, a little bit more intensely, and that it builds upon itself. So,
yes.
As you said, that response prevention component, we have to cut out these compulsions.
Mm-hmm.
But if we cut out compulsions, what are we stuck with?
The anxiety. Right. And you spoke to the prayer, a 5-minute prayer can become hours long.
Yeah.
We've seen this many times where a person says, oh, I could just do it one more time. They could say that word one more time, and it's never one more.
Right.
It's cyclical.
Right. It never gets to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
So would this be a good time to talk or to shift into what treatment looks like?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
Well, let's do that. So what would treatment look like for someone with religious scrupulosity?
Right. I just want to start by saying a person of faith can definitely do exposure and response prevention and stay within their faith.
Mm-hmm.
Exposure and response prevention does not have to be contrary to anyone's faith beliefs or practices. Okay. A culturally considerate clinician should be able to work with the client and say, hey, does this fall within your belief practices?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a clinician can help a client construct exposures that fall within a person's faith. So exposure and response prevention, just to back up a little bit, is exposing somebody to their feared stimuli, so their triggers, and then cutting out the compulsive behaviors that do away with that anxiety that we talked about or that uncertainty. So for a Muslim, this might look like, you know, we're gonna talk about what's required in the prayer, and we're gonna pray, and you're allowed to say things one time, right? So a person might start their prayer saying Allahu Akbar, right? That's the opening word to our prayer. Mm-hmm. And a person with OCD might want to repeat that over and over and over again until it feels just right. So an exposure would look like, say it, and you say it one time.
Whether or not it satisfies that right feeling.
Right.
Say it.
Right. So in ERP, we lean into the feared outcome. We lean into the anxiety. We say, here it is. We welcome it and we move on, knowing that eventually one of two things is going to happen. Either a person will feel less anxiety over time, meaning those triggers will no longer trigger them. But what is more likely to happen is that they'll create that new relationship with anxiety. I can have anxiety during prayer, and I can do it in a non-OCD way.
And yeah. It takes practice. It takes practice to be able to say it, to say a prayer, and letting it feel wrong, but saying, though it feels wrong, doesn't mean that it is wrong, though it feels wrong.
Right.
I think that's part of it. And I've talked about this with my clients, and I presume you have too. It's all these exposures, I call it act of faith. We're doing these things and we're cutting out the compulsion. The compulsion is then done, presumably, to prove to God or prove to yourself that you're on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
So we're cutting that out in the sense of saying, I already trust that God knows who I am, what my intentions truly are, what I'm about and what I'm trying to do in this. I trust that God knows. So by cutting that out, we're saying, this is an act of faith. God is, you are who you say you are. You know that I'm, why I'm doing this, what my struggles are, and that I'm that my intentions are trying to be the best blank, in this case, the best Muslim I can. Mm-hmm. And so in other words, I think that I think that ERP can be a, this sounds overly spiritual, a worshipful act.
But absolutely, yes.
But it's though it's hard, though it's uncomfortable. But no one ever said religion was going to be easy.
Right. You know, we believe that God tests everyone in their own way. Mm. And for a Muslim with OCD, they can look at it as this is their test. Mm. And God knows them better than they even know themselves. We say God is closer to you than your own jugular vein. Mm. Right. So when a person can take that leap of faith and have a belief that God knows and he is all forgiving, and you're just going to go in there and do the best you can, and that is enough.
Yeah.
Then we have a lot of room for ERP.
Because within that, what you just said, there's a ton of then flexibility that is allowed. If you're just doing X without having to do all the other machinations that OCD wants you to do, it frees up all this time, this effort, this energy, and lets you be able to focus on things that you actually enjoy out of your faith and out of life, as opposed to all this worry on, or the hyper-focus on what I'm not doing or not doing enough.
Right. I mean, I want to give people that message of hope that they will open up all their time. And Muslims, we believe that everything we do can be an act of worship. So with all that time that you save, not doing all those compulsive behaviors, you can go out and do good works. You can serve your community. You can serve the greater community. You can spend time with your family. You can do all those things, which are also acts of worship. OCD will create its own religion. It will create its own set of rules. Mm-hmm. That can be found nowhere in the religion. So if we remove all of that, then what you're left with is a ton of room to become your actual, true, best, God-fearing, God-worshipping self.
Right. So within our examples of exposure and response prevention thus far, so treatment for Scroop, we've been talking a lot about response prevention, the second mm-hmm. half of it, because ERP, it's two parts, exposure, response prevention. Exposure is getting someone closer and closer towards their fears, with response prevention being resisting the compulsive behavior. In other words, resisting anything that would neutralize, nullify, avoid, subvert, reduce the anxiety, or gain certainty. So the point of saying the prayer once and then not doing the prayer again or apologizing for it, a lot, what we're talking about there is response prevention. What can be a big aversion or obstacle for a lot of folks when they're hearing about treatment for OCD is, well, there's the exposure part, and it's doing something. People will read articles or blogs or something like that, and they'll say, my therapist had me, you know, eating food off of a toilet seat, doing extreme things. And then they might work with someone, or they might read a story about someone saying, hey, I have religious scrupulosity, and what my therapist had me do was tear pages out of my Bible or tear pages out of my Quran as something that, to get at my fear of blasphemy, I had to do this. In other words, that's kind of the exposure piece. Could you speak to the role that exposures have, not just response prevention, in other words, doing things extra in treatment? I know there's a lot within this, but can you speak a little bit to that for someone who may be hearing this and going, I'm not going to do that.
right. And I think that's a great question. It's so needed, because oftentimes people can be afraid that the exposures that they're asked to do don't fall within their faith. I have a client who was asked as an exposure to put a stone in front of him and pray to the stone. And that's a big no-no for us, right? That client came to me, and I'm sure, Kevin, you would do the same. You say, okay, well, what can we do within the prayer? Even the act of praying is an exposure.
Right.
right? Even just the act of praying, getting up and praying, using the bathroom can be an exposure. Let's use the bathroom and use 7 pieces of toilet paper rather than the two rolls you were using or the buckets of water that you were using to wash yourself. That can be an exposure. Let's set a time limit on the amount of time in the shower, in the bathroom. You know, we can even just say words like Bismillah, like in the name of God, and say it one time. And just saying the word can be an exposure. Mm-hmm. A person who's afraid of accidentally ingesting pork, that's another common one we haven't mm-hmm. talked about, right? They can go and they can go eat and out at an In-N-Out. And well, In-N-Out doesn't sell pork. That's a really bad example, right? Yeah, so they can go eat somewhere else where they might sell pork.
Carl's Jr., let's go.
There we go. Carl's Jr., get some fries at Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
Right? That's an exposure. So exposures can be constructed very easily, and they can always be values-based. We're very values-driven. Do mm-hmm. things that align with your values that you're going to be doing during the day anyways. Mm-hmm. Let's cut out those compulsions during that response prevention.
Yeah, those are fantastic examples, because in all the examples you gave, they're very values based. Mm-hmm. They are getting a person back to living the life that they want to be living, not necessarily going and doing something extreme or something out of the ordinary. Now, of course, this opens up this ultimately speaks to, and for those of you who are not in the therapy land world, good, you don't hear these arguments. There is the argument about doing exposures that are values focused versus doing the extreme things. Kind of like saying, if you want to run a 5K, train as a 10K, because that way the 5K will be super easy to do, right? And I think there's an argument to be made for it. But when it comes to someone's spiritual life, someone's religion, I think the example that Mabina is laying out here, I think, is probably the most effective way, because you're not saying here's something you have to do that's above and beyond or extra or something that's intentionally blasphemous. The example of praying to a rock, I couldn't even imagine asking someone to do something like that.
Right.
But as far as an active exposure, it's great. It's a great exposure. If you're worried about doing blasphemy, do blasphemy. But that. If that is not culturally sensitive, it's not spiritually mm-hmm. sensitive, and you're not going to get buy-in from the client, and it's ultimately not going to help, it's going to set them back. So saying what's the best way is actually living your faith, not yeah. above and beyond, but live your faith while cutting out all those compulsions.
Right.
I know right. I'm talking all of a sudden.
No, that's great. I just want to add one thing, that a person's OCD can become very meta, and you can start doubting the treatment and doubting whether this is all actually culturally sensitive or not. And that's where the trust is going to come in. So I do some exposures mm-hmm. that are not 100% values-based. So if a person has, I'll give you an example. You could tell me, please, yes. You could tell me, Kevin, if you think this is values-based or not. I'm not sure.
You're the expert here.
So if a person has worries about blasphemy
yeah.
and they would think, you know, that tree is God, I'll have them go walk outside, just saying God, looking at things and saying God. Right. So there's no sin there. Right. They're just saying God. That's great. Go say God. Say walk around and say Allah, 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 and look at a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And you will get an intrusive thought, and you will get that urge to do the compulsion. And you keep going. You keep walking around and saying Allah. And let's review the next day. Right. Mm-hmm. How did that go? Well, I did it. And I'm pretty sure I'm still Muslim. Right. That's usually how those exposures end up.
Right. Yeah, because in that for this hypothetical person, is the worry something like if I say it, I might all of a sudden mean it, and
yes.
I might in that give up on my commitment to Allah.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I might be out of the faith then because I said the word God and I looked at a tree or a bush.
And how would one know that?
Right. It doesn't follow logic. It doesn't follow reason. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. But certainly anxiety and the feeling of anxiety within someone seems to know for a fact. And yet the goalpost often changes, often constantly changes. Okay.
Right.
Any other examples of, any other examples of exposures that you might want to give or the way that exposure therapy can be done? Maybe perhaps what's the role of scripting for someone within Muslims group?
Right. It would depend on the theme, but they could do scripting around committing blasphemy. So scripting is basically writing out your worst case scenario. I did X, Y, Z, and this is the outcome of it. So I committed blasphemy. Then I lost my family, my community, everybody ostracized me, and now God is displeased with me. So a person can write a script around that, and they can write in as much detail as possible so it feels very real. And this can be a really helpful tool in leaning into that worst case and actually fully experiencing the anxiety that comes along with it.
Right. So you spoke to something a moment ago about having a culturally sensitive or spiritually sensitive therapist. So unfortunately, a practicing Muslim OCD specialist therapist is not on every corner. Oftentimes, someone seeking or someone struggling with religious scrupulosity may have trouble finding somebody who, one, knows what religious scrupulosity is, two, understands the ins and outs and the details of what it means to be a practicing Muslim. But that can be discouraging. They often, I talk with folks where they often want to work with someone of the same faith because they're going to respect and understand that faith background. How can somebody who is trying to seek out therapy find someone who's going to be sensitive to their religious background and their religious desires if they can't find someone who is someone like you?
Right. Yeah, good question, because there aren't a lot of Muslim OCD specialists. There are some out there. Mm-hmm. How can somebody find a culturally sensitive clinician? First, I'll say you can always interview a therapist before signing on the dotted line. It's never signing on the dotted line, but you can always interview a therapist before you start treatment with them, right? You should be able to talk to them for 10, 15 minutes, get an understanding and ask them, you know, I am a person of faith. I do have these beliefs and practices. And how would you go about doing exposure and response prevention with me? Mm-hmm. And listen for things like, well, I would work with you to construct exposures. I do values-based exposures. I am ready to talk to a faith leader. Do you have a faith leader that I can speak to? Mm-hmm. Right? So listen for those things. Try to interview somebody and see if they come with that sensitivity that you're looking for. Clinicians are generally educated and experienced in being culturally sensitive. Not to say that they all are, but we get education on how to come to the table with someone and be sensitive to whatever they're going through and whatever beliefs and cultural practices they come with.
Right. You outlined a lot of great things to start looking for, because you're not going to, it may be hard to find someone who checks all the boxes for you, but listening for someone who's going to be sensitive, who's going to care, who's going to listen, and is going to adapt. I've even said, you know, even if, as I've talked about, I'm a Christian and I work with Christians, I will ask them what their experience is within their faith. Because it doesn't mean that just because I practice means that we do the exact same thing, have the same value on all the same things. So even if you find someone who is Muslim, they ought to ask about your experience, and you might need to do a little bit of education for them, for the therapist, to kind of get you two on the same page.
Oh, wow. You brought up such a good point that even if a Muslim comes to me, I am working with them. What do you believe about this? Because there's so many schools of thought,
right,
and so many belief. And then they might even fall on a spectrum. Maybe they don't pray five times a day and that they're not there. They don't want to. Maybe they don't fast in Ramadan. And that's all fine. So I work with the person, or maybe they go and do things above and beyond what I do. And that's fine too. So we always work with people. And Kevin, I know you see people who are not Christian also, and I see people who are not Muslim too. So we all kind of really work hard to work with our clients on creating those values-based exposures.
Right, right. And for anybody out there, if, you know, so another thing to look out for is if you're working, wherever you might be, let's say you find a therapist who doesn't share your same faith background. And I think this goes for any faith. If it feels as if they are trying to guide you away from your faith, or it seems like the therapist is proselytizing to you about their own faith, that may not be the best fit. I'll say that stronger. It's not the best fit. It's my job is not to be someone's pastor and to tell them how to live their faith. It's we're trying to be, as Alec Pollard calls, the OCD police. We're just trying to point out where compulsions exist, how do we cut back on those, and how did we get this person to live their best possible faith? So for someone who's, you know, for someone out there who may be looking for that therapist, in interviewing therapists, kind of look out for that. Does it feel like they are dismissive of your faith? If they are insulting of your faith, that may not be someone for you. It bothers me that I have to say that. But it's one of those things just to look out for. And but to that end, Mabina, for someone who's out there, is it safe or is it okay for someone to have? Maybe we already addressed this. Is it safe or okay to have a therapist who doesn't share the exact same faith that you do?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. Yes, like if you had diabetes, would you go to a doctor that wasn't Muslim? Right? They will be advising you on diet and medication, right? Mm-hmm. But you would trust them to be culturally sensitive. And in the same way, if you need clinical help, mm-hmm. right? It is absolutely okay to reach out to a non-Muslim therapist.
How do we incorporate religious leaders into treatment?
Yeah, so finding a trusted faith leader is the first step. Somebody that understands mental illness. They exist. They exist in the Muslim community. I speak to them. And not every faith leader will acknowledge mental health afflictions in fully, and it's just a matter of being aware of that and finding a trusted faith leader who understands what OCD is and what anxiety is, and then asking them, right? Can you talk to my clinician, or can you talk to me? Can we discuss my OCD? Can we discuss what exposures might look like? I personally as a clinician go to faith leaders at times when I feel like it's outside of my scope. And I might ask, you know, is this exposure, is it acceptable? And I've never gotten the answer that what I'm doing is not acceptable. So, you know, there's a lot of room for exposures in Islam, and a lot of faith leaders are ready and willing to help people with OCD. I'll just add one more thing.
Yeah.
Talking to faith leaders, they tell me they're really on the front lines of treatment, right? Because their congregation will come to them first saying, hey, I didn't get my prayer right. Can you tell me how to do this? And they might come again and again and again. And so that's where they'll recognize this person has OCD. So they're really on the front lines. And a lot of them are searching for clinicians that can help. And they're really pushing Muslims to go get correct mental health treatment.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've gone through a ton of information. Is there an element of this that we haven't addressed or that you want to go into a little bit further?
I would just like to bring it home that exposure and response prevention can align with the person's faith. OCD is not a faith issue. Mm-hmm. There are resources out there. IOCDF is one of them. They have an entire faith and OCD resource page. I'll put a plug. There's a conference coming up in April, a faith and OCD conference. There are a ton of resources out there. And if a person is Muslim and is afflicted with OCD, there's a lot of hope. There's treatment. And OCD is very treatable when a person gets the correct form of treatment.
I love it. I don't think there's anything else to say with that. If I'll open this up. If someone has questions about religious scrupulosity, specifically within Islam, would they be able to, would you be willing to jump on in a future episode to talk about or to answer that question?
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Exciting. Okay. And I will bother you as much as I possibly can to get you on for that.
Nice. So. I would love to, Kevin. I think this is such an important topic, and I appreciate you and all that you do for the OCD community and for people of faith with OCD.
Of course. It's absolutely my pleasure. So, well, why don't I release you back to the wild here? So thank you so much for joining us for this and sharing your wisdom and your heart in this.
Of course, anytime. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the FearCast. If you would like your question answered on a future episode, please click on the Submit a Question link at fearcastpodcast.com. If you would like your question answered sooner, please send me a recording of your question to questions@fearcastpodcast.com or by sending me an audio message through Instagram by DMing me at fearcastpodcast on Instagram. If you like the FearCast, please write a review on your podcast platform of choice. Please remember that the FearCast is not a substitute for psychotherapy. If you need a little bit of help in your recovery, please go over to fearcastpodcast.com and click on the Find Help link, and there's going to be some information for you there. So until next time, take a risk, challenge yourself, and don't take your brain too seriously. Bye.